It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's autumn, football season, and in towns across America, that means big games, halftime, and marching bands. These days, in many towns and schools, the marching band can be as big a deal as the team. At the Rose Bowl and the Macy's Parade, they dazzle. But they dazzle, too, on Friday nights under the lights in towns you may never have heard of. Kristen Lane marched for the Red Devils in Indiana as a high school girl. She's gone back now and gone deep on the marching band of Elkhart, Indiana. Up next, On Point, inside the booming culture of the American marching band. Joining me now in the studio is Kristen Lane. She moved her family to Elkhart, Indiana, to chronicle a high school marching band season there. She's out with a new book on the band and its culture. It's called American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. Kristen Lane grew up in Indiana, where she was a Devilette for her own high school team, the Richmond Red Devils. Kristen Lane, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
A Devilette. Describe your outfit.
Oh, please. No, don't make me. No, red sequins. Think red sequins.
Of course.
Think leg makeup and hair that, when curled, could not touch the collar of my military uniform.
Wait a minute. Leg makeup? I'm out of it here.
It was a long time ago.
You have to use your legs to dance and to march in the band. Yeah, it's not Richmond you went back to, but Elkhart, Indiana, way up north. The name of the high school is slightly confusingly, but it's called the Concord Community High School, sort of an amalgamated high school there in Elkhart, Indiana.
That's right, and they call it Concord, just so
Concord.
You know.
Concord, okay, good, thank you. And this was not just any band town. This was a super prize-winning band.
That's right. They... in fact, I should say they were part of Elkhart, Indiana, or just south of Elkhart, where band instruments were made for many years. So, of course, you will
great,
have this.
What,
Kahn, Selmer, right. Gemeinhardt, if you're a flute player.
Listen, I know those. I played the trombone. I'm tall,
yes.
So they said you'll play the trombone.
Exactly.
Never got to march because I was
right.
always playing the sports, but I had the trombone made right there.
Right. So Concord is a school out of basically farmland, south of Elkhart, north of Goshen, and it is a community that has for generations supported its marching bands in ways that really rival that, maybe even exceed that, of the way they support their football team and basketball team.
We're going to hear a lot about how they do that on the field and off, the culture around this. We're going to reach out to other marching band cultures around the country as well, but I wish you'd read for us, if you'd be good enough, Kristen, right from the top of the book. This is actually before the season you spent intimately with this marching band, where they were going to the very top of the Indiana marching band competition. Give us a sense. Give us a flavor.
Okay. Well, this is from Prelude. Of course, this is a book about music, so I call it start out as a prelude. And this is the band as they are about to compete in the 2003 state final championship for their class, Class B. They knew they would win. Even as the Concord marching Minutemen heeled and toed onto the artificial turf, holding their instruments at attention and their chins so high they couldn't see the ground in front of them, they carried themselves with the certainty of champions. 216 teenagers raised resolute, sure faces to three drum majors and beyond, to thousands of spectators who filled one side of the massive RCA Dome where the Indianapolis Colts would play football the next day. They knew, each of them, that they would march in long lines that turned to the right and then snaked back left, that they would follow each other backward through curves, and that they'd bring three and four and more rows together on the field and rotate them, keeping each line and each diagonal straight, and do all of this so precisely that the judges watching from boxes high above the field couldn't find a single foot out of step. They'd thought about and practiced every move and every sound they made on the field so many times that they could perform the routine on command, with their eyes shut, and now, when it counted. They knew they had the power of a community behind them, They would form their lines on a brightly painted cubist tarp in the shape of a guitar, the neck of which led to a stylized scroll through a series of ramps and platforms. The set had been built and painted over hundreds of hours by band dads, now standing on the sidelines in matching green jackets. The dads had run onto the field to assemble the set before the Minutemen went on, and they'd swarm out afterward to take it down. Band moms, who all season had tended to blisters, sunburn, thirst, tears, sewed uniforms and served food, dispensed thousands of hugs, now stood in a block and shouted, "Give me a C! Give me an O!" For 8 minutes, the high school students would play a sophisticated medley that their director called Guitarras Españolas. First, a concert band fanfare led by the crack trumpet section, followed by a technically difficult piece that sped up as it progressed, requiring the horn players to double tongue while they marched nearly 3 steps every second. Crashing cymbals would herald an edgy concerto for electric guitar and wind orchestra, a composition so new that it had premiered in concert only the year before. Their finale, a swing band chestnut so familiar no one played it anymore, and therefore shocked with both recognition and surprise. And then they went out and did it.
They did it. Kristen Lane reading from her new book, American Band. And Kristen, there are things we recognize from time immemorial here. We've got the crashing cymbals and the crack trumpet section, of course. But then, you know, you've got your band dads and band mobs and ramps and platforms and a guitar-shaped cubist tar. I mean, it's not only the technique, it's the whole community around this, just absolutely wrapped in it.
That's absolutely right. In communities like those in Concord, and there are many like this in the country, this is not unique by any means, just a great example, you have not only hundreds of students, maybe 250 students in a marching band in a high school of a little over 1,000, really remarkable, but also...
A quarter of the school.
Just about,
amazing.
Yeah. But you also have double that many parents coming in and assisting the band directors in helping the kids put together their shows. And they'll do that by creating props, by helping the kids with their uniforms. They really surround the kids in a way that shows those kids that this is, in fact, a great show. And, it, you know, it's the show of their lives, really.
Okay, we know you were a devilette way back when in Richmond. What on earth were you doing going out to Elkhart to spend, well, you know, months and months and months immersed in marching band?
Well, you know, I'd been away for 25 years. Actually, I should start back. When I was in high school and I was in the band, you know, it did, I have to say it, it's a cliche, but it's true, it changed my life. I had been a geeky, smart kid, picked on in junior high. Mm-hmm. I got to high school, I got in the band. I found a place where I felt at home. Mm-hmm. I found a place that actually allowed me to work with my peers, not alone in a classroom, but together with other kids, and to reach for something bigger than ourselves. Mm-hmm. We were trying to win a championship ourselves. We did our senior year. It was a wonderful experience for me. I wrote my application to Radcliffe College, now known as Harvard, about being a devilette.
Oh, and, boy.
Yeah, but
must have her.
That's
red
right.
Sequins, yes.
That's right. Geographic diversity, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But partly, I mean, my story is, in fact, it's universal. So many kids find a home in band. They find something bigger than themselves. It's a class, but it's more than a class. It's like a sport, but it's not a sport.
That home so big, so powerful, that 20s odd years later, it called you back to come and look
well,
again?
Yes, because I'd gone back to a high school reunion and I realized how much band had meant to me. 25 years away, I'd lived on the coasts. It was a joke for me most of the time.
Marching bands, oh, come on.
Oh, that's right. You know, and along with, you know, the kinds of foods I ate back in the Midwest, mm-hmm. you know, the little mini marshmallows and limoncello,
have
all
a
that
corn
stuff.
Dog, let's go.
That's
all right.
Right. But I think I realized that it had been important to me. And the question then came up in my mm-hmm. writer's mind, mm-hmm. is it still important now? Mm-hmm. I called my former band director, and what he told me is that it was so much bigger now than it was when I had been in high school. And that, of course, intrigued me. So then,
not just in Indiana, but right across the country.
All across the country. There are these communities, I call them marching band communities, that have similar kinds of bands, similar senses of the community wrapping around the kids so that they can create great kids. They see themselves as doing that better than places that don't have those things like marching band.
What does the marching band at Concord mean to Elkhart, Indiana?
I think it means a couple of things. First of all, they have just a long tradition of doing it well.
Mm-hmm. This is band instrument capital of the country,
exactly.
So they would.
But they see themselves as combining music and movement and then a kind of a character building to create great American citizens, really.
Is that explicit? Are they talking like that when they're practicing and working on band, when they're having their band meetings?
They don't say great American citizens. Mm-hmm. They say great citizens, great kids, great adults. They believe that all of the skills that the kids learn on the field and together as a group create great adults.
And they don't just twirling their drum.
No, they do not.
Drumsticks. They're talking about working together, about buckling down, about
discipline, learning the importance of appearance, of respecting authority, and respecting then each other's authority as leaders. The kids learn to lead in the band as well as play their music and learn their drill. It's all of that wrapped together, along with, I think, what's still left of in a kind of Americana belief that being in a marching band means a kind of form of patriotism and, in fact, does create great citizens. They do follow that lineage.
Does it strike you that this all can seem so 1950s? Here we are, 2007, and it's back and it's big, and these kids are very earnestly into it, no question from your book.
That's right. Well, they never stopped following that tradition. I think that's something that maybe other people in other parts of the country may need to know. They see themselves as having held on to this tradition along with others that other parts of the country have left behind to their peril. And so they see this is something you do in America. If you're a kid growing up, you are in the marching band.
Kristen, it's great to have you, and a lot of people are calling in. Let's go to Aaron in Southbury, Connecticut. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you know?
I just wanted to add a kind of a different perspective here. I've been listening. It's very interesting, this whole conversation about the bands and everything. And most of the bands and the schools that we're talking about are fairly large public schools and, colleges and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Me coming from a small private school in Trumbull, we had a smaller, very small band, but we still got to experience all that Americana and all the patriotism that you were talking about, as we played Star Spangled Banner at Shea Stadium a couple times.
Wow, that's pretty good. How's it rank for you as a life experience?
I'll tell you, being able to hold the American flag as you're listening to your high school band play the Star Spangled Banner, it's chilling, but it's also great at the same time. And one very quick comment, I just wanted to say that I think this is another interesting example of how music throughout history has been able to bring people together of different races, cultures, creeds. No matter what, it seems to be that music is a very powerful force, I guess you could say. And it's just very interesting.
No kidding. It brings a lot together. We're going to hear later in this hour from Eddie Ellis, who's band director at South Carolina State University, the Marching 101 there, a tremendous college marching band, and with a lot of black musical history in the work that they do. I mean, it goes right across and interweaves strands of American culture, Kristen.
That's right. And Aaron, you bring up such a good point. I think there's something, first of all, that's wonderful about moving as someone learns to play music. The kids that I talked to in the band talked about how they understood music in a different way as they were marching. So you just have that right off the top. That history, though, that you mentioned, it's so important and so interestingly American. If you think about marching bands, they obviously their roots are in the military. But in America, we have these interesting intertwining strands. One of them is what happened to those big touring bands like John Philip Sousa back at the turn of the 20th century that brought the barnstorm, the country, and really brought the civilizing influence of music, like classical music, to a country that was learning, still a little raw around the edges and was learning how to kind of understand its own culture and create its own culture. You have them coming in now with so many of the marching bands now, they are explicitly bringing in another thread, and that's the black parade bands. Comes straight out of the African drumming tradition, up through the parade bands of New Orleans. And so even the Gene Krupa style, that's swing music, that's jazz, that brings in our African-American musical musical tradition right onto the marching field.
Now, in Elkhart, Indiana, you had a pretty white school and a pretty white band, but was the music white, if I can put quotes around that?
No, it was African American, and in fact, the show that they played the year that I was there was called The Roots of American Music, and those roots did not go, in this case, through John Philip Sousa. They went straight from African drumming, or at least what they were calling African drumming at the time, all the way up through swing music. That was where they had to stop the show. But the Gene Krupa beat that we just heard there, mm-hmm. that was, you know, that's jazz, and that's really bringing in a lot of the African drumming rhythms.
It's a
right
big
in there.
Gumbo here, and everybody pulling from all kinds of parts of it. It's amazing to see. I mean, it's no longer the geometric kind of marching of years ago either, whether it's an Elkhart or you name it. I mean, these bands go in all kinds of formations. It's wild out there.
It is truly wild. Very different from what I did in the 70s, where you're saying, you're right, it's not 90-degree angles, it's not, you know, 45-degree angles. They go in nonlinear forms. And interestingly, each kid will march a unique path in some of these shows. So they can guide off each other, but each of them has to learn their own path. And it became, for me at times, kind of a metaphor for what it's like to grow up now.
So there's some jazz on the field, but I have to say your description of sort of the values and the way forward was more about the straight and narrow, as I was reading. I mean, you call it coming of age in the heartland, and there's a lot in here about people wanting to find strong values, deep values, very often explicitly in Elkhart's case, Christian values, articulate them and stick with them, and somehow marching band gets melded with that.
Yes, it does. For some of the students that I spoke with and got to know, whose lives are profiled in the book, they were explicit about bringing their Christian, their evangelical, fundamentalist evangelical Christian faith on the field. It was, you know, and just to go back, marching band is for many kids an opportunity for them to interact with each other in ways that, and to become leaders of others and, you know, other peers in ways that they may not be able to do again until they're in their 20s or even 30s. Mm. So for these Christian kids, they saw this as an opportunity to bring their faith right on the field and practice it in a real way with real consequences and rewards. They saw themselves as trying to do what Jesus would do on the practice field.
What does that mean in a marching band?
Well, in this band, now they had a director, Max Jones, who gave them kind of a framework that they could put in religious frame again in religious terms. His framework was, if you're a senior in this band, you are a leader and you need to lead and mentor and motivate your peers and then the kids who are younger than you. And he would say to them, you need to look out for the kids who are struggling, the kids who are having a tough time marching or learning their music. And then you need to do outside of class time something to take care of that.
So there's the giving, the caring kind of
exactly.
Kind of element here.
These kids, though, having also, you know, they go to church, they go to youth group during the rest of the week. They were hearing in their churches, live your faith out daily. And they melded the two together without their directors necessarily knowing it or their pastors. But they then created a teenage culture that was Christian, and they tried to live kind of the Sermon on the Mount.
Wow,
right
who
there.
Knew what was under those tall hats at the 50-yard line? Let's get a call from Ellington, Connecticut. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Eric. I just want to recognize the band directors and their role in affecting change for the youth of America. I graduated from the smallest city in the United States of America, Vergennes, Vermont, the Fighting Commodores.
All right.
And our band director, Susan O'Daniel, transformed the entire community. When she came in, there was nothing there. When she left, we had the largest Memorial Day parade in the entire state. Mm. And I can't speak to the amount of effect that band directors have on young people's lives.
And what about you and other kids you went to school with personally, Eric?
Well, there's another element in here, and it has to do with placement. There's going to be individuals in a high school of that size, less than 1,000 kids, that are just not going to fit anywhere. They don't belong to cliques. They don't subscribe to any of these sorts of organizations, and band is a location for them to place themselves and avoid bullying and develop into adults.
And have a group of their own with a great big mission right there in practice and on the field. Eric, thanks very much for that. Kristen, I want to bring in somebody who's been in the band that you write about there in Elkhart, Indiana. Joining us today from Grand Rapids, Michigan, is Grant Langenbau, former trumpet player for the Concord Community High School's Marching Minutemen Band. He's now a junior at Calvin College in Grand Rapids. Grant, thanks a lot for being here.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. Kirsten's paying a lot of attention to your old band. What did it mean to you?
I can't really say anything more than what everybody said. It's a huge influence on kids. It was a huge influence on me. Every day there's something, I learned this in band, or I learned that in band, and it might be annoying to other people, but it's true. It influences more than just the artistic and musical side of your life. Taught me how to lead, taught me how to work with people who weren't like me. Even if Concord was a largely white school, that didn't mean it was unified in its, economic status, or mm-hmm. even just in its interests, that there were kids in there that weren't like me at all. In contrast to maybe like a sports team or after school, if you go to if you enroll in the military, it's not it's more the same type of people, and there's no other place like marching band where you have to work with different people. So
where everybody gets melded together. Grant, I wonder what you make of the fact that marching band is such a booming phenom right now in this country. Is it? Do you see it as filling in, giving kids context, values that they don't have other organizations to offer them?
Yeah, I think so. I think people might be realizing that over-focusing on, the self and individuality and self-sufficiency and, teenagers making themselves into themselves all alone is kind of bankrupt, and that you really realize who you are, and you get a sense of your role in the world, really, by giving yourself up to a group and by belonging to something, I think.
Mm. Grant, that's terrific. So it sounds like it stuck with you very strong, and we appreciate your joining us today.
Thank you.
Grant Longenbaugh joining us now from Calvin College. He was in exactly the school and band that Kristen Lane writes about in her book, American Band. I want to bring another voice in here right here, if I may, joining us from Orangeburg, South Carolina, and we're honored to have him. It's Eddie Ellis. He's band director of the South Carolina State University's band, the Marching 101. His band travels around the country to perform. Performed last week for an NFL game during halftime, Atlanta Falcons versus Carolina Panthers. He's directed high school and college bands since 1975. In the 4 years since he joined the South Carolina State, he's doubled the size of the marching band there to more than 300 students. Eddie Ellis, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. How you doing?
We're great. Tell us why this is so popular right now in 2007.
Well, it's popular because there's a lot of interest, not only with those people who are participating in the band, but from the general public also. It's very entertaining and exciting, and I guess that's one of the attributes. The other thing I think is the movie Drumline. Hmm. That has generated a lot of interest in our genre.
And, of course, Kristen Lane has been talking to us about the different traditions that come together on the field when the marching band comes out. What tradition, American musical traditions, do you feel yourself and your musicians pulling from, Eddie Ellis, when they hit the field?
Well, when we hit the field, as you know, during the early, the late 1900s and early later days, bands. Every community had a band, had a community band, and in addition to that, there were a lot of American Legion bands.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms, they competed and they did a lot of intricate precision marching maneuvers. And what we do, there are a lot of different styles, but what we do here at South Carolina State, we do what we call traditional marching styles, where we do a lot of precision marching along with the music that we play. So in terms of tradition, we pull from that genre. Some of the people who were famous in doing the things that we do, the Bill Moffett and Casavant, those were the two people instrumental in terms of doing the things that you would see us doing on the football field.
Mr. Ellis, let us get a call from your neck of the woods. Craig's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Craig, you're on the air with Eddie Ellis, director of the South Carolina State Marching Band.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ellis, I want to say how great your band is. I went to Carolina, and as a season ticket holder, I saw you guys come out to Columbia a couple weeks ago, and everybody I know and talk to says we could trade our band for yours. You guys were fantastic, and it was one of the few times that I actually pay attention to the halftime show as opposed to time in the bathroom. Outstanding job.
Hey, there's a big applause line. Let's hear the South Carolina State Marching Band right here. You heard it right at the beginning, SC State. Kristen Lane, is this the kind of band that high school band members aspire to one day be part of?
Possibly. It's a different, slightly different tradition. What I love about bands like the one that Eddie Ellis directs, and hello, Eddie, it's so great to have you here together talking about marching bands. The college bands are called show bands. They and this is a great example of that. The idea, it's right out of John Philip Sousa. Mm-hmm. You're entertaining an audience, bringing them in, playing them wonderful, rousing music, often very popular music from, you know, the last couple generations. The high school bands that I followed do something slightly different. They are in a class, and so the kinds of music they will
play... I mean, it's
one
of their classes in school.
That's right. It's one of their classes in school. Therefore, mm-hmm. they have an educational requirement. And the competitions that they participate in then ask them to consider the educational component musically of what they're playing. So, for example, one of the bands that I talk about in my book is the Jasper High School Band from Jasper, Indiana. Mm. They played Samuel Barber's Second Essay for Orchestra. Probably not a piece that a great college band will be playing anytime soon. It was modern, kind of as an early, very melodic, but still a difficult piece. The band parents in that community learned it so well that they could hum it. So, very different.
Music being propagated right here. Eddie Ellis, give us a sense of how hard your crew works and prepares for these performances.
Well, we work very hard. As I stated earlier to someone, we report to school 2 weeks before school actually starts. This year was August 5th, where we go from about 7 o'clock in the morning to 12 or 1 at night. Now, not
midnight.
But we break for lunch
and
break for dinner. And, of course, when it's real hot, we're on the inside. And, of course, we do that because we can't practice like that. The schedule, our academic schedule, won't allow us to do that when school opens. So we have a band class that meets from 4 to 5:30. And those young people who are not enrolled in that class, we meet again from 6:30 to 8:30.
Wow.
And that goes on every night.
And out of that, the competition and camaraderie and no doubt friendship, a lot more than music is taken away, I'm sure.
Of course. And, of course, the second semester, we don't do marching band. It's simply the symphonic band. And I might add something to this in terms of most college bands, we are performing every week probably to a different audience. So in terms of, like the young lady said, our music is more pop-centered and hip-hop-centered, and we do special tributes where we play some patriotic tunes. But we, like I said, every week is a different audience.
And it's alive. Eddie Ellis, director of the South Carolina State Marching Band. Mr. Ellis, thank you very much for being here.
Yes, sir.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a vibrant corner of American culture this hour, the marching band. Kristen Lane is with us. Her new book is American Band, Music, Dreams, and Coming of Age in the Heartland. She followed a band in Elkhart, Indiana, but they are cooking all over this country these days. Behind us right now, the Oceanside Marching Band of Oceanside, California, performing Tales of the Nile. Well, you name it. The heartland goes wide when it comes to bands these days. Mark's calling from Blackstone, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you know?
Well, I want to let you know my favorite Color Guard captain 30 years ago is the woman that I married.
So you did find somebody special out there in spats or whatever they were.
Absolutely. And now we both teach in the local marching band here in Blackstone. And I just wanted to kind of let people know that we don't have tryouts for our band. And I think it's an important component to understand that that especially for kids at risk, marching band can be that place, as Kristen mentioned, where you can you're encouraged to belong and do something that you quite often can't do in any other place. So I just wanted to let people know that this is something that means a lot to people. Of course, as I said, it means a lot to me just based on my own personal experience.
You got a wife and a career out of it. Not too bad.
That is pretty good, isn't it?
That's great. Mark, thanks very much for calling. Let's get another from Jamestown, Rhode Island. Edwina, you're on the air.
I was in a drum corps when I was a youngster in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts.
In Boston,
I want to point out that most northeastern cities had drum corps or marching bands in just about every major city and in Catholic parishes. That's if you were in Boston then, you were in, kids who weren't in sports were in drum corps or in bands or drill teams. That venue provided youngsters, and the man just ahead of me commented on a place for kids at risk to be. Well, there wasn't much money around in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and drum corps taught us discipline as well as the skills, you know, the marching skills.
Yeah.
And it was a saving grace for a lot of youngsters certainly in my neighborhood, and I will bet in other Boston City neighborhoods.
Edwina, we love hearing it, and we thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
Kristen Lane, talk to us about the geography of marching band popularity these days, and also about the money angle. We hear all the time about budget cuts in high schools around this country. But first, geography. Where is marching band most popular these days, or least, or is it everywhere?
It isn't quite everywhere. It is extraordinarily popular in the Midwest, in the Southeast, in Texas, and the parts of California that are not L.A. or San Francisco.
Over the hills.
Go over
Pasadena.
The hills, and you get into marching band country. Mm-hmm. And interesting, I think it's growing in some of those outer ring suburbs of some of the metropolitan areas.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of great marching bands, say, in Omaha, Nebraska, and in other places. I was so interested in what Edwina was talking about, because there is another thing called drum corps, which came up in some cases apparently through the Catholic youth organizations. I was not aware of that.
Mm.
But through Boy Scouts is where I've mostly heard of that lineage. Mm-hmm. And there are these summer drum corps. Those are now audition only. They're kind of like the Olympics or the minor leagues of marching band, depending on whether you want to focus on the travel schedule, that would be the minor league aspect,
mm-hmm.
or how difficult they are to get into.
And what about school budgets now?
Right.
Does marching band get protected as sports do in some schools, but then even sports in a lot of places, you have to now pay to play.
Right.
What's happening?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to describe something. The Concord system and the Concord administration, I think I'm going to tell you just a little bit about that, because there are going to be band directors out there who are going to just moan, wishing that they had this. In Concord, there were 7 staff band directors.
For all sorts of musical performance, or just marching band?
For band.
Band
7
in general.
7 band directors.
Wow.
Who taught middle school and high school band.
Mm-hmm.
Max Jones was one of the most highly paid, I think he was, in fact, the most highly paid teacher in that school district.
The band director.
The band director.
In the whole district.
In
the band director is number one.
That's right.
This has to be the home of con instruments
the
rest.
And he had the biggest office, bigger than the athletic director
that
school. He had actually, there was in the music ring, it looked like a small corporation. So, you know, that was even unusual in the state of Indiana. But in a school district like that, and they aren't unique in Indiana or in places like Texas, for example, the school school music program is so well supported by the community that the superintendent will get phone calls when a band director retires saying, you know, we want to make sure you get the best.
So if there are cuts to be made, it's not going to be in marching band there. But what about nationally?
Well, so nationally, sadly, it's a very different story. And this idea that I was talking about, that at one time being in a marching band, a school band, was considered a great patriotic activity. You're going to become a great citizen if you did that. At a certain point, and it coincided with many of the other cultural changes that occurred in this country, so roughly around 1960, what happened is music became considered part of the arts. The arts were no longer considered mainstream. They were separated from that civic culture component.
So it's something expendable.
Exactly.
And it's something effete or outside
exactly.
that mainstream.
And so actually those people who want to see good school music programs might do well to reconsider some of the ways that you think that these communities think about music.
Let's get a little more high school music in our ears. Here's a clip of the sound of the Elkins High School Fighting Tigers Marching Band. Elkins, West Virginia, starts out with a tat-tat-tat of drums. And off they go in West Virginia. Let's take a call from Nashville, Tennessee. David, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, I'd like to throw a little counterpoint into the mix.
Let's
hear it. I agree with most of your callers, but I would suggest that they're talking about everything but music, and I think that where marching bands fail is in that area. It's great social, maybe, and it's certainly good for drummers, but I don't think it does much for the other instruments, and I think that it hurts them in that it sucks all the air out of the room, if you will, and all the money out of the program.
So what are you saying, David? This isn't, by your standard, real music or sufficiently refined to merit that kind of respect artistically?
I think it's PE. I think it's phys ed. I don't think that there's really that much emphasis placed on anything above rudimentary music. And I think that it takes the money away from jazz programs, from Great American Songbook, from classical, and all those other things.
What's your perspective on this, David? Are you involved in high school musical education?
My son was a musician. He was a very good musician. He wanted to be part of the symphonic band, but couldn't because he had to play in the marching band as well. I ended up getting him set up in an independent study. He did well. He studied with a college professor up the road and ended up going to an Ivy League school because of his ability.
Absolutely fascinating. David, stand by. Christian, what do you say to David here?
You know, David, I agree with you and disagree with you. Not quite an equal measure, maybe. Where I agree with you is that I do think there are programs where the musical part, the important musicianship of any ensemble gets lost in either the marching or, more often, the impulse to win at all cost, which can mean that some kids are cut from a program or that the emphasis is on what it looks like.
Showboating.
But I have to say that in programs like Concord, I did not see that. In fact, what I saw was a way to reach many more people through, to get them involved in music, to understand music. The students, their parents, those people support their orchestra, their jazz bands are almost as well known as their marching band, and they take them to the same high level. So I think what I think of, and I've heard this from band directors, marching band is accessible. It's an accessible musical tradition. And in that sense, it's a wedge into a community. Once you get a marching band going, you should be able to then expand into other programs that maybe take a harder sell, like an orchestra. Frankly, I haven't noticed in any of these communities that jazz band is a hard sell. People love that music just as much as marching band music. And the musicianship is extraordinary when it is done well by a good director.
David, we wish your son well on his symphonic path. Absolutely. Let's get a call from New Orleans, Louisiana. Victoria, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to comment as an audience member. You know, I grew up in New Orleans, and Mardi Gras was always a highlight of the year. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's incredible excitement around the parades and the floats, but the real power was when those high school marching bands came down the street, bands like St. Augustine High School and Booker T. Washington. And, you know, I'm a little white girl standing on the sidelines, and, man, I could feel it in my soul when those guys came down the street. And their calisthenic moves, I mean, you actually had to watch out because they were flipping their tubas around, and it was quite an experience. So I just wanted to acknowledge what a thrill it was for me as an audience member on the side of the street watching those marching bands go by and the excitement and power of that.
It does get the blood running. So when you see and hear that, Victoria, is it P.E., as David says in Nashville? Is it great music? Is it both?
No, well, I mean, definitely. There's definitely a super physical aspect of that. But, you know, the music was pounding and loud and lots of times popular, you know, from popular music that we were listening to on the radio. So you could recognize your favorite song, and you couldn't help but dance on the sidelines. You know, it was wonderful because you were on your feet, you know, watching the parade.
Yeah.
And everybody, you could see all the heads in the crowd bouncing up and down when the bands went by. It was a great experience.
There's the word from New Orleans, and it does sound great. Thanks very much for that, Victoria. Let's get a call from Woodford, Rhode Island. Peggy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Two things. I wanted to tell you about my daughter's experience at the College of Worcester in Ohio, mm-hmm. which are the Fighting Scots, and they wear kilts in the band.
All right.
And they come marching over the hill playing Scotland the Brave, which is quite moving. But they bring the freshmen in, and they bring all the band members in early. So she is a freshman joining the band, got there 3 or 4 days early, and it really allowed her to make friends in a way and, you know, and introduce her to the college life. Sometime during her 4 years, the band became derided by other students, and there were comments and signs about band geeks and various things. And she and another girl said, well, the heck with this. They went out and got a bunch of buttons made that said, I'm a band geek. And all the band members wore those all the time.
So
no matter what, you know, what they said, didn't get anywhere.
So there's band pride. Yeah, baby, yeah. Yeah.
I also wanted to tell a story. I don't know if it's in the book, but it involves Ohio State University, which the band does Script Ohio, where the band spells out Ohio,
okay.
Marching in script.
Yep.
And then the tuba guy runs around and dots the I. Brown University, at one of the games I was at, did Script Brown, and they very nicely marched and spelled out B-R-O-W-N in script. But then the tuba guy was running all over the field because he didn't know where to go. So there was no I to that. It was just the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
That's a good, sound like maybe a gimmick, but a good one. Peggy, thanks very much. Let's get a call from Nashville again. Charlie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I hope you're having as much fun as I'm having listening to you.
Yes, we are.
Back when I was a young fella, I went to Grambling College. I went as a rather unique student. I was the only white guy there for 3 years.
And, wow.
when I was there, they had such a great time introducing me and walking me around and inviting me to play and be with everybody. I never could carry a tune, but they invited me to be part of their legendary marching band. And when I got on the field, I was carrying the Grambling flag.
So you were the white flag bearer in front of a big black band. And how did it feel?
Felt great. And you know, that year we went to the very first Super Bowl. It was called the Grand Championship out at the Coliseum in Los Angeles. And marching up the field, here comes that legendary Grambling band with that white fella carrying the flag.
Charlie, I can see you right now. You're going to be out on the playground tonight reliving. That's terrific. Terrific
but
story.
But I'll tell you, I can't relive those steps. She was mentioning earlier 3 steps a second, and that's indeed what it was, 180 steps a minute. We used to run up and down those bleachers, getting our legs in shape. I couldn't run up and down those bleachers today, but it was wonderful back in 65.
Don't throw your back out, my friend. Thank you for the call. Kristen Lane, you got deep with these families and these kids. And, I, you know, it was astounding to me. I mean, they were – the search for values was just so present in among these band members as you described them. I mean, they're really looking for places that are going to put some priority on – on discipline and determination and kind of sticking with a group effort until something great comes out of it. I was struck at just what a big theme that was, at least in this town with this band.
Yes, it was. And it. I went looking for that story, but I think I didn't understand all the different threads in it until I'd been there some time. You know, I felt that I was seeing something kind of great in middle America. These are parents who put their kids and raising them first. That's why they'll take off halfway through a work day and come and help out with the band. And a kind of a homogeneity of values, I would have to say, that but that
focused on... Do you mean that in a praising way or not? Or
well,
what do
both,
mean?
I suppose, in the sense that, you know, they had no problem saying, we have a dress code here, we expect...
it's a new generation.
Well, it is, in, you know, and a generation that I found myself admiring in many respects. They were good, clean-cut Midwestern kids who thought a lot about big questions. What's my place in the world? You know, what's my relationship, in this case, to my God and my faith?
What about politics? Did they think big in those terms?
No.
That's where the lockstep of the marching band comes in?
Well,
no?
You know, I think alongside some of these things that I admired so much, I also saw a real fear of difference. And I find it interesting that inside the band, many of the kids who were, you know, in other classes called losers, they were maybe elbowed into lockers. In the band, there was a real place for them and a welcoming home. And yet,
so home for difference, but not necessarily within it acceptance of difference, even though they're playing music from every tradition we've got in this country.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the easiest way for me to get at some of this interesting mix of things is that there was a young student I got to know who at some point identified himself to me as gay. And he didn't like the way that he was treated. He was regularly asked by kids, are you gay? Because if you're gay, you're going to hell. That kind of thing was hard to be around as an adult journalist watching him. And yet, when he was talking about what he wanted to do, all he ever wanted to do was to go off, learn to be a teacher, come home, find a nice guy, settle down, right there in the community where he'd been born and raised, be a part of that community with the white picket fence right in front of him. He told me that with such yearning that to me it just said, this is what it is altogether.
Well, there's quite a story in all its complexity, right onto the field. Kristen Lane's book is American Band. We're delighted to have had you, Kristen. Thanks
Thank
for
you
joining
so
us.
Much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.